America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is The Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great nation despite the fact that the United States is looking more and more vulnerable to nations around the world. Why? Well, partially because even on something as basic as responding to a pandemic, getting people fully vaccinated, the United States seems to be horribly divided, where people accuse people on the other side of bad faith, bad intentions, conspiratorial, dictatorial intentions. What do we do about that? And what about the impact of Afghanistan? Has that not desperately detracted from the prestige, from the credibility of the United States in dealing with other nations? Ralph Peters has been writing about those subjects, and he did a recent piece for the Hoover Institution about our mistakes in Afghanistan, and particularly our mistakes in the withdrawal from Afghanistan that was arranged by President Trump and now seems to have damaged his administration a good deal. Ralph is a prize-winning, best-selling novelist, the author of innovative works on strategy and security. He's a retired U.S. Army officer and former enlisted soldier, too. And his unusual career took him from Moscow to Mandalay and from the Middle East to Latin America. He just returned from Italy, which you may remember had one of the worst initial impacts of COVID-19 in that nation. Let's start there, Ralph. How is Italy doing right now relative, say, to the United States in coping with the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, Italy is doing much, much better than we are, and it's sad to say. And you know, all the jokes over the centuries about Italians' anarchical bent or indiscipline, the Italians, and I just spent 2 weeks there, the Italians are behaving with admirable discipline, common sense, rigor. The government has instituted mandates and keeps tightening them, and they've worked. I'm living in Virginia near Washington, D.C., and I'll tell you, those 2 weeks in Italy were the first time in going on 2 years that I felt I had a normal life. Yes, people were wearing masks indoors. They were taking all the measures, but once you saw beyond the masks, things were freeing up amazingly. And even as we speak, Michael, the Italians are looking at opening of stadiums, film theaters, opera houses to full capacity, and they've been doing it sort of step by step, carefully measuring it out. And there, I think the key, though, without droning on, is that what Italy has right now, for the first time in a very long time, is real leadership. Mario Draghi, an economist basically with tremendous experience, has proved to be the right man for the right time. He's shaping up to be the man who replaces Angela Merkel as de facto leader of the EU, of Europe. And so from the top down to the local politicians, you have very, very few people stepping out of line on that. There is a small anti-vax movement in Italy. But the last time they called a big rally, about 20 people showed up, or as the Italians would say, quattro gatti, four cats. So as an American, I'm really embarrassed at our slovenly response to an epidemic that has killed almost 700,000 Americans. That's twice the casualties of World War II. And Michael, I'm at my wit's end. I mean, we've come to the point where Americans, well-educated Americans, people I knew, the people I grew up with, they prefer to believe internet craziness over science, and it stuns me.
Well, it is stunning, and the question I would really ask you, you've traveled the world, you've worked for the Army as an intelligence officer, you know other societies very well and know their history and know their internal challenges. Why is the resistance to the vaccine so much higher in the United States than any of our primary allies?
Well, I think it's very straightforward, really. For years, thanks to the internet, We have been targeted by Russian and Chinese disinformation specialists who are very, very sophisticated. And this isn't some crack-brained conspiracy theory. We know this. Our intelligence community has identified them, has identified specific sites, specific individuals. And COVID has really intensified this because the Chinese and the Russians are both very embarrassed. The Chinese are embarrassed because, hey, you know, whether it was in a lab or jumping from a fish market, this virus exploded out of China and over the rest of the world. So there's Chinese embarrassment over that, but also the Chinese, for all their progress, rushed to get vaccines out, didn't do the proper testing like we do, didn't do the vetting, and their vaccines just don't work very well. Now, the Russians, same thing. Russians rushed out vaccines to beat us, to beat everybody else, and the Russian vaccines don't work very well. Whereas the world wants Moderna. The world wants Pfizer. In Italy, the big three are AstraZeneca, Pfizer, and Moderna. And talking to Italians, and I've talked to a number of them, I speak Italian, talking to them about this, and boy, they all want the American vaccines. They all want Moderna. If they can get it, they'll take Pfizer. So here we have a situation, Michael. We have the doses available to end this pandemic. We could do it in short order if Americans got the vaccines. And we've got the vaccines, and they're free, and Americans don't want them. Meanwhile, the world is clamoring for American vaccines. And, you know, as far as vaccines go, you were talking about all the time I've done in so many places over the decades. I've got more vaccine shot in my arm and other body parts than I can count and I can remember. And I haven't grown a second head. You know, I haven't turned green. Bill Gates is not giving me secret orders through microchips. Vaccines are miracles. This is modern medicine. This is modern science. And now that we've had these vaccines for almost a year, Moderna and Pfizer, and these horrible things are not happening. They're very, very safe. But people keep believing the wacko, crazy stories on the Internet. Now, part of it, Michael, is that people have a need to believe in extraordinary powers, that something else is manipulating their life and screwing it up. Essentially, we need to believe in witches and warlocks and demons and devils on some level. And the Internet's glad to supply those witches and demons and devils. And I am really stunned, though, even so, that my fellow Americans won't believe something in the Wall Street Journal, but they'll believe something from a site nobody's ever heard of on the Internet, you know, Rabies Boy 69 or whatever. And I just tell people, look, you want to pull stuff off the Internet, make sure you know who the source is, what the source is. Because many of these sources, we keep taking them down, and Microsoft keeps taking them down, Google keeps taking them down, but they keep coming back. Many of these sources are just outright lies with our enemies messing with us, because they, the Russians and Chinese, don't want us to get the shots. They want us to look bad. They want us to suffer. They want America to be an absolute mess. And so, as you and I have discussed before, Michael, you and I truly believe in this country. You and I truly love this country, and with good reason. And as patriots, it's our duty to our fellow citizens to get vaccinated. Because it's not about personal choice. It's not about personal freedom. It's about the fundamental duty to protect our citizens and our society. And, you know, coming back from Italy, where I lived a normal life for 2 weeks, coming back to this great, great country, this wonderful country, and seeing people refusing to get shots. I mean, my state, Virginia, 56 people died yesterday. There's no reason for that. Not one of them had to die.
We will be right back with Ralph Peters and also talk about how there could be a link between the disaster in Afghanistan and the way the withdrawal was handled, and the collapse of faith in our institutions that he's talking about. We will be right back on the MedVed Show with Ralph Peters. On the Michael Medved Show, speaking with Ralph Peters, who is a an expert on national security, having worked as an Army intelligence officer for many years. He has also written tremendous books, not just his series of Civil War novels, which are astonishing and worth reading for anybody out there, but also books on strategy and international relations and what is going on with the world in its security system and its economy. And we were talking before about the strange idea that, America, which has built up institutions that are recognized around the world and respected around the world, American medical institutions, as Ralph was saying, in you go to Italy, you go to Europe, you go to Asia, they don't want Sputnik. They don't want the Russian vaccine. They don't want any Chinese vaccines, which have also been made available. They want American vaccines. So given the fact that, there's so many Americans who don't, it's and I think you and I agree on this, it is a sign that there has been a general collapse in national faith in institutions that were once profoundly trusted. And that, by the way, includes the military. That part of this pandemic and the difficulty with the pandemic does concern, it seems to me, the fact that everybody trusted, even at a time when they didn't trust media or they didn't trust one party or another party, there's a general trust in the American military. There's a general trust in American police departments, in the general medicine. All of that seems to be shaky now. What do you think it is fair to question the effectiveness and judgment of the American military, of the Pentagon, for instance, in wake of the Afghanistan disaster?
Well, I certainly trust the professional competence of our military. It's not a question of what they can and cannot do in terms of abstract power. The problem is that political correctness has crept deep into the military. So our military is vastly capable, but if the political leadership misuses the military and military officers succumb to political correctness, then you get negative results. I mean, I do think our military is still, it remains the most trusted single institution, and for good reason. We take that oath to the Constitution, and we've always honored it. There's never been a military coup here. On the contrary, we guard against them. But this general atmosphere of mistrust of which you speak, it is very troubling, deeply troubling. I think there are multiple reasons for it. But one that I always keep going back to is the decline in K-12 education. You know, every child gets a prize. Teachers aren't necessarily always competent, though. We've taken civics and serious history teaching out of the schools. History teaching has been politicized to the extent kids get it, and propagandized. And people, Michael, you know very well, people naturally gravitate to their own kind, their own belief systems. Certain types of people join the military. Certain types of people become radio stars like you. Certain type of people go to Wall Street. Certain type of people become teachers. And those who become teachers do naturally skew left. And so you've had this sort of goofy leftist line, the America's bad line, where we'll learn about Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We'll learn about the Japanese internment, but you never learn anything about the Bataan Death March or Japanese atrocities on a massive scale in China. So we see it right now playing out with so many things, or the idea that America's bad.
And by the way, if I can bring up what you were talking about the Bataan Death March and learning about Hiroshima, what people really don't know about, and it always stuns me, is how heroic even General MacArthur, who's a controversial figure, was in rebuilding Japan. How did Japan go from being this nightmare, militaristic, imperial regime to being a peace-loving, prosperous, freedom-loving ally of the United States it is today? That's a heroic role that nobody focuses on.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And by the way, the secret is that it applies to Germany as well. The reason the post-war period went so well is because they knew they were defeated. It was an existential struggle, and we would do anything to win, as they would have done anything to win. And when Germany lay in rubble, when Hiroshima and Nagasaki had been leveled, they knew they had lost. Their system had failed utterly. There was no excuse, and they had to start again. And we provided them aid and role models, and it really worked. And so after centuries of the German problem terrorizing Europe militarily, now you've got Germany. Germans just don't want to fight anybody anywhere. And I'm okay with that, frankly, Michael. But I mean, history is important. It's vital. It has to be taught objectively, not with a left or right wing slant. And this is a great country. We have a great story. You know, when I hear about reparations, I have two questions. One, can you name another country on this earth that fought a bloody civil war to free its own slaves? And the other question I ask is, slavery was horrible. No excuse for it. It should have been gone a long time before it was. But let's not make extravagant claims for anybody. As far as reparations go, I don't see why I'm due. You know, my Civil War ancestor died wearing Union blue to free the slaves. My ancestors were coal miners in Pennsylvania. They didn't profit from slavery. And so the idea that, you know, all white people were guilty of slavery, I'll tell you, my coal mining ancestors, they really didn't have slaves, unless you count their wives who had to work really hard all day doing laundry and getting the coal dirt out. Again, Michael, we could ramble for hours. I'll just say this again and again. This wonderful, wonderful country deserves a responsible citizenship. Responsible citizenship in the age of COVID means getting the vaccine, playing by the rules, and bringing us back to full health.
Do you think that once that is accomplished, and I don't think whether it's accomplished, is when it is accomplished, that that will be a healing moment for the country? We have about a minute left.
No, I don't. I think that the Internet is utterly insidious. Mass media has become utterly insidious. So I would just tell people this. When you're getting information from the Internet, check the source. If you can't confirm who is putting it out, don't believe it. We live in an age of instantly disseminated global lies, and each citizen is responsible for picking through the lies and getting to the truth. And that means sometimes believing things you don't want to believe. But the truth makes us strong. The truth sets us free. It does. The truth is what enabled us to win World War II. The truth has built America. America is built upon truth. And when we succumb to partisan lies, right or left, we harm this great country deeply.
Beautifully stated and worth remembering. That's Ralph Peters, his most recent piece in the Journal of the Hoover Institution at Stanford is posted at our website at michaelmedved.com. When we come back, not everybody even attempts to speak the truth. Somebody who regularly and deliberately and famously lies just got slammed by a court. How and why? We'll get to the Alex Jones story coming up on The Medved Show.
We need to deal with the truth.
The Michael Medved Show.
On the Michael Medved Show, Alex Jones is quite a character, and that's the most gracious thing you can say about him. He does a show. He has a whole network called InfoWars, and he's waging his own InfoWars with a big diet of misinformation, and. As Mediaite reports today, yesterday, a Texas district court judge who is named Maya Guerra Gamble eviscerated Jones and reasoned that default judgments should be ordered because of an escalating series of judicial admonishments, monetary penalties, and non-dispositive sanctions have all been ineffective at deterring the abuse. What abuse? It's Jones found liable for statements regarding Sandy Hook school mass shooting. Now, it's not just because he expressed an opinion on Sandy Hook. He claimed that he had absolute proof, proof that nobody could deny that Sandy Hook didn't occur, that the 20 children and the six teachers who were killed in this mass shooting were actually actors. They were crisis actors. He one of the things that he said on the air, though this has not come up particularly in the suit, was that the crisis actors were Jewish, and he said you could recognize them because of the side curls, as if Jewish people or even a significant minority of Jewish people wear side curls. And the result of his going on and on and on about how Sandy Hook was a conspiracy and his claims that the families who were seen mourning their children, can you imagine? You have a six-year-old killed in classroom and just horribly killed. And then there are people who come to funerals or mourning services and say that you're a liar because you say these children were killed. The children actually were taken someplace and preserved someplace. And all of this involved anti-gun people who wanted to take away your Second Amendment rights. And the idea that Alex Jones is still able to purchase airtime and to sell his snake oil products and to make an estimated $20 million a year is shameful. And the way that they write about it, Mediaite, it's not a meteorite. Far-right conspiracy theorist Alex Jones and his outlet InfoWars were found liable. And this was unveiled by the court yesterday in two lawsuits for statements regarding the 2012 Sandy Hook Elementary School mass shooting. Now the Jones and InfoWars have been found liable. Quote, a jury will now be convened to determine how much he will owe the plaintiffs. And it certainly will be plenty because it will undoubtedly include court costs for this court case that's been going on and on. Jones falsely said that the mass shooting in Newtown, Connecticut, where the shooter killed 26 people, including 20 children, before taking his own life, was a giant hoax and a false flag operation by crisis actors who were against the Second Amendment. Jones has been sued for defamation by nine families of the victims in Texas and in Connecticut courts. And they've talked about harassment that they have received, threats. And the difficulty here is what the judge decided yesterday is that basically had been subpoenaed, what had been demanded from Jones would be this proof that he keeps talking about, because that's relevant. If you're being sued for defamation, if you're being sued in a libel case, truth is an absolute defense. If you can show that what you've alleged is true in any way, well, then no problem. And Alex Jones has not been willing to, quote, disclose any of this information. And he's gone through seven different lawyers and basically tried to thwart the legal process of examining the validity or lack of validity of what he had been preaching. And here's just a few of the things that Jones said on air about the Sandy Hook conspiracy. Listen.
The official story of Sandy Hook has more holes in it than Swiss cheese.
My gut tells me the White House, people controlling the government were involved in this. So don't ever think the globalists that have hijacked this country wouldn't stage something like this. They kill little kids all day, every day. And it's not our government. It's the globalist. I mean, they're doing it. They're doing it. They're staging it.
Okay. And that's just a small, small taste. I do think that some of what the judge said here in her decision was exactly the point, is they're trying to proceed with this legal proceeding. And what they did is they granted a default judgment, which is basically, that's kind of the death penalty in legal terms. In other words, if you're engaged in a major legal conflict, a default judgment means that you have no basis in what you are saying, and goodbye, end of story. Your side of this case is over. Well, not as far as the Alex Jones camp is concerned. They issued a statement today and said this: it is not overstatement to say the First Amendment was crucified today. The First Amendment does not, and this is in case after case after case, grant you the right to knowingly tell lies, say things that you have reason, or a reasonable person has reason to know to be untrue. You have no right to tell lies that are going to damage other people and to some extent ruin their lives. And what we're talking about here is the kind of suffering that the families, and there are three different families, two primary families, who actually lost children in this horrible tragedy. And they have suffered intensely from threats and persecution and invasions of privacy. He has given out the names of the families. The Gamble's rulings, that's the rulings that were announced yesterday, related to two lawsuits that were filed back in 2018 by Sandy Hook parents Leonard Posner and Veronique De La Rosa, who lost their six-year-old son Noah, and Scarlett Lewis, whose six-year-old son Jesse was also killed in the shooting. Posner and De La Rosa say they've faced emotional distress and have been harassed for years by InfoWars followers who have followed Jones' lead and falsely claimed that the shooting was staged. Neil Heslin, the father of Jesse Lewis, also filed two lawsuits in Travis County against Jones and InfoWars. Those suits were not included in the judge's rulings this week. By the way, the reason that these cases were brought in Connecticut and Texas is because Texas is the headquarters for InfoWars and Alex Jones. And Connecticut, of course, is where the parents lived. They've had to move away, basically, some of the parents, because of the harassment and the real horror that has been involved with their treatment in these accusations. By the way, the idea that it may be true, the fact that Jones is losing this based on the fact that he was able to produce no evidence at all that it was true, and yet he continues to make money on it. That's the basis for where we stood. We also have somebody else who says nothing to defend the truth and talks about truth being subjective. That would be Kamala Harris. We'll get to that coming up. And on the Michael Medved show, I'm not comparing Kamala Harris to Alex Jones. No. However, they do have some things in common, including the idea that there is no such thing as truth, that truth doesn't exist. It's interesting. We heard earlier this hour from Ralph Peters, who spoke so eloquently about why one of the essential elements that has made the United States great has been the pursuit of truth and the elevation of truth above lies and slanders and conspiracy theories and paranoia and stupidity. Now, what does this have to do with Kamala Harris? We played on this show yesterday some of the tape of an interchange that she had. She was at George Mason University in the Washington, D.C. area. And she was speaking to students about voting rights. She had been on campus for a voting rights rally supporting the Democrats' attempt to pass what they call the John Lewis Bill, which would completely redo on a federal basis the way that we vote in the United States of America. Some of the John Lewis Bill is worthwhile. Most of it is basically just a federal and Democratic power grab, but leave that aside. The way that this is covered by the Times of Israel, which is, of course, very concerned about what happened here, is they point out Vice President Kamala Harris strongly disagrees with a university student who told her that Israel was carrying out ethnic genocide. Her office said, pushing back against claims, she encouraged the student's view. Now, if she strongly disagreed, why didn't she say something? Why did she say that the student should hold on to her truth? She used the term her truth. And what would you say if somebody was a Holocaust denier? Well, hold on to your truth. What would someone say if an individual, I don't know, believed that the vaccines were the product of some international conspiracy? Really? Would that be her truth or his truth or somebody's personal truth? Harris has reached out to Jewish organizations, says this article, after sustaining criticism from Republicans and Jewish communal leaders for not correcting the student during a visit to a political science class. Harris was on the campus Tuesday to attend a voting rights rally, as I mentioned. Harris spoke for about 15 minutes to the class about the importance of organizing and making one's voice heard, tying it to Democratic Party efforts to push back against a spate of laws in Republican-led states that add restrictions to voting. They don't add restrictions to voting. That's the Democratic line. What they do is they try, sometimes imperfectly, but they try for the most part to add safeguards to voting, but that's a different story. Your vote is an expression of your voice, she said, and we should never support anything that would stifle a person's voice, Harris said. And then she took questions. And one woman who emphasized that she was not American, that she was Yemeni and Iranian, challenged Harris's claim that speaking out brings change. You brought up, and this is a transcript, you brought up how the power of the people and demonstrations and organizing is very valuable in America, but I see that over the summer there have been protests and demonstrations in astronomical numbers standing with Palestine, she said. But then, just a few days ago, there were funds allocated to continue backing Israel, which hurts my heart, because it's ethnic genocide and displacement of people, the same that happened in America, and I'm sure you're aware of this. The woman appeared to be referring to protests in May during Israel's conflict with Gaza, and then to the U.S. House of Representatives' overwhelming approval last week of $1 billion to replenish Israel's Iron Dome anti-missile system, which was depleted during the conflict. And the whole point of Iron Dome is to defend civilian targets from missiles that are aimed at them pointlessly in wars initiated by Palestinians, and that Israel has in every case been very glad to end as soon as the missile barrage from the terrorists stops. And the idea that this is ethnic genocide is completely ridiculous when you actually look at the growth in Palestinian population. And by the way, the relative success economically of Palestinian people in living in Israel compared to Arab people living right next door in Jordan or Syria or anywhere else. Okay. And then she said, the people have spoken very often of what they do need, she says, the student, and I feel there's a lack of listening. And then Kamala Harris spoke. And Kamala Harris said this. She said, I'm very glad you spoke up, saying your voice, your perspective, your experience, your truth should not be suppressed. Who is talking about suppressing that? But she just endorsed it. The point that you are making about policy that relates to the Middle East policy, foreign policy, we still have healthy debates in our country about what is the right path, and nobody's voice should be suppressed on that. Harris said that organizing and voting were effective means of making one's voice heard, casting the students' views as part of a broader debate. Our goal should be unity, but not uniformity, right? She said, unity should never be at the expense of telling anyone personally that for the sake of unity, oh, you be quiet about that thing. You suppress that thing. Let's not deal with that thing. That's not unity. True unity is everyone in that room has a voice. But you have the Vice President of the United States standing there listening to a student who's not even an American, who is saying that she is convinced that Israel has committed ethnic genocide, which is completely not true. And for Kamala Harris, who now comes back and her office talks about all of her support for Israel in the past, and she has been supportive for Israel in the past, what possessed this woman not to respond and say, look, you have a right to your opinion, but I disagree with it? She's saying that now. But she's thinking with the world watching and cameras there. And by the way, part of what's happened is the Iranian TV networks, propaganda networks that the terrorists in Iran put forward have all said that, no, look, Kamala Harris agrees with us. I don't think she wants to agree with Iran. She is going to have to speak about this more. It's not going to be enough for her to simply say, well, I've always stood with Israel. And the Rabbi David Wolpe, who is the rabbi of Sinai Temple in Los Angeles, one of America's largest conservative Jewish temples, and he's in Harris's home state of California, said, Madam Vice President, the idea that Israel has committed genocide against the Palestinians is not someone's truth. It is someone's lie, whether they know it or not. And it is pernicious, destructive, and should not be elided, avoided is what that means, or ignored by the highest officials in the land. Harris's office reached out to at least two pro-Israel organizations in the wake of the controversy and talked again about her past record. This is one of the reasons that I think what we were talking about earlier today with Jerry Bowyer is eminently true. I do not believe that either Joe Biden or Kamala Harris will be the Democratic nominee for president in 2024. I have an idea who it is very likely to be, it appears to me. And he just won a big election. His name is Gavin Newsom. He's the governor of California. And why? Because he won the election in California by a very decisive margin. And now he has a whole other election to go through where who knows who's going to run against him. But he won last time. He's winning by 60% in California. He is not elderly like Joe Biden. He won't have that record behind him. He will be away from this mess in Washington. By the way, we'll bring you the very latest. Biden is meeting behind closed doors right now. Not with anti-American students, but, well, some of them may have one time been. But he's meeting with members of the Democratic caucus to try to work out their dispute. Do I think Gavin Newsom would be a good president? I think he'd be a terrible president. Do I think he will be a formidable candidate when he runs for president in 2024? More formidable than Kamala Harris, his fellow Californian, and probably more formidable than Joe Biden, who was badly damaged by recent developments. And we will see what happens with this latest confrontation in this greatest nation on God's green earth.